Guests enjoyed the pleasures of reading, dining, dancing in the starlit evening, rowing on the moonlit bay, writing long, intimate letters, and waiting for the mailboat for a response. There was little else to do. The hotel was a temperance house. Radio had not been invented yet. On the porches by the sea, there was Edith Wharton's popular Ethan Frome to read, and W. Somerset Maugham's Of Human Bondage. The children were in a tizzy over Kenneth Graham's new storybook, The Wind in the Willows. The distant views were of twisted sea pine among the dunes, lonely golden eagles floating over the backcountry, and the water, thick with bluefish and striped bass, oyster and hard clam, which New Englanders called by the Indian name quahog, and Philadelphians called Venus. Most of the guests of the Ingleside, born to the Philadelphia aristocracy, read Latin and Greek. On clear days, the ocean appeared infinite before them. Long, gentle waves curled languorously onto miles of virgin beach and returned endlessly back to sea. But if the surf held the song of a siren, it had long been resisted. For many years, the Ingleside's Victorian guests were too modest to disrobe to bathe. Philadelphians, changeless as their old and distinguished city, were reluctant or afraid to enter the water, for ocean bathing had not been done, and so was not. But late on the last night of June of that year, the desk man at the Ingleside heard gentle splashing and frolicking in the water in front of the hotel. The young were challenging their Victorian parents with rebellious behaviors, and the latest fad was moonlight swimming. Perhaps the older generation was growing sentimental, aware of the looming shadows of the European mess. But many a deaf ear was turned that summer to the midnight air. The young were allowed to get away with it. The clerk that night heard nothing. The first cool air of the day blew through the hotel's open windows as the faint strains of hits such as Don't Take My Darling Boy Away spilled out over the water from the popular new portable camp and seashore Victrolas. The hotel's first 500 electric lights glimmered and swam in the darkened sea. Deeper into the night, after the hotel was quiet and dark, the splashing and laughter in front of the Ingleside lulled and finally ceased. At dawn on Saturday, July the 1st, the hotel and the ocean were united by the bright gold band of beach. Breakfast was served in the Ingleside dining room by young Irish immigrant women from Boston, while the men read the Philadelphia Public Ledger and smoked Turkish cigarettes on the porches and discussed the German march to Paris and the fall of the Philadelphia A's to last place. That was the summer the great Connie Mack affixed to the American language the axiom, "You can't win them all." That weekend, Mrs. Hetty Green, the world's richest and stingiest woman, would die, leaving $80 million and the notorious legacy of having refused to pay for an operation for her son, costing him his leg. By late morning, the sands were crowded with young men and women in the startling new swimming costumes, the women revealing inches of leg never before seen in public. In playful teams, men and women built sandcastles, a new art in America and Europe that year. The shouting and flirting rose and fell like a nervous and reluctant tide, for this was all new, this lush and languid meeting of mankind and the sea, this joyful display of flesh. In his office, under the great spire, hotelier Robert Fry Engel reviewed the booking columns for the Independence Day weekend with great satisfaction. Engel, an artist and a gentleman given to tapered suits, arrow collars, and the polished grooming of the new century, which included the new style of a clean-shaven face, shared his father's level-eyed Philadelphia Quaker pursuit of profit. For the second consecutive year, all 150 rooms, rooms for 300 people, were sold out from July 4th straight through Labor Day. Engel, like his late father, born of old New Jersey stock, disapproved of the immoral and noisome behavior of some of his more modern guests, particularly those who tippled the stronger waters. But there was no denying the wonderful impact of the new horseless carriage and the railroads ferrying middle-class tourists en masse to the seashore, whatever their nouveau morality. The Ingleside had never experienced